But joining me back on the program today is author Ken Sanola, who we talked about Nigeria last time on the What Really Happened show. And I want to bring you back on because of all the recent events and attention that are in Nigeria. But for a lot of people, it seems like violence is just happening out of the blue, and we really don't have a good backdrop or story on Nigeria for why Boko Haram is acting the way they are and what's been going on. We have the kidnappings and the bombings, but prior to that, can you give us a quick background on Nigeria and what's been going on leading up to this point so that people can have a better understanding for what's going on? Because this is very typical of the news. There's been a bombing somewhere and nobody knows why. They just hate us for freedom or something. So what's really going on?
Hi, and hi, listeners to Ryan's show. Thanks for having me back on, Ryan. It's a pleasure. And yeah, as you said, and something that annoys me is that they never give you true context when the powers that be or the media that be speak about these stories. It's just the bombing's gone off somewhere. We're not going to tell you about that random country or the random city. We're just going to tell you it's a bombing, and that's why you should care. And like you said, you know, freedom's important to everyone.
Well, in Africa, sometimes the mass media, they can't even get their basic geography correct.
I mean, the general problem that people think Africa is one country is, you know, royally annoys a lot of people, including Africans themselves. I mean, Africa is a very diverse place, obviously. To start with the background of Nigeria in itself, because again, with its diversity, with its richness, I think it really takes off a lot of Nigerians that unfortunately Nigeria is boiled down to just that oil, supposedly oil rich country, you know, where all of those Nigerian princes live that apparently sent everyone the scam emails. So let's look at Nigeria for what it really is. You know, beautiful country that it is, like all countries are, you know. Nigeria gained its independence starting in the 1st of October 1960 and officially becoming a republic in 1963, October 1st. It's currently, you know, one of the powerhouse nations in the world, even though it doesn't get its credit. But if you look at what Goldman Sachs predicts, it's a powerhouse. For example, current GDP is north of $260 billion. Population is about the 7th biggest population in the world at about 174 million people.
It's about 2/3 of all the population of Africa also.
Yeah, I mean, it's massive. It's a massive country. I mean, it's the most populous African nation. It's now that they rejigged the mathematics, and some say it's a play on the mass, but it is now officially Africa's largest economy and the 26th largest economy in the world. So, you know, you can't really sneeze at that, whatever the real figure is. More important details as well. Again, you have to look behind the curtain and for, again, all of the things they tried to pull Nigeria down to be. Why are the powers that be there, number one? And also, why are some of the big institutions like Goldman Sachs so interested in Nigeria? For example, Nigeria is one of the mint countries. And a lot of people may not realize what that means. Because I say mint, you may think, does he mean the leaf or the extract mint? No, I mean Mexico, Indonesia, Nigeria, Turkey. They are seen as the next BRIC or Brazil, Russia, India, China. They're building a coalition, and this is going to be a very powerful coalition because Mexico, Indonesia, Nigeria, and Turkey, if you just look at their populations alone, that's massive. And the clout they will have in the future, just like the clout BRIC is now really starting to exude around the world, is going to be massive. Also, Nigeria is also part of what they call the next 11 or N-11 or the N-11, which is Bangladesh, Egypt, Indonesia, Iran, Mexico, Nigeria, Pakistan, the Philippines, Turkey, South Korea, and Vietnam. And again, Goldman Sachs are the ones that came up with this term through their economist Jim O'Neill and a research paper. So, and this is all looking at the potential of these countries and where, you know, they see businesses expanding to where there are opportunities for exploitation or development.
Right. It's a challenge to the unipolar world. And
well, you say challenge, or some people may say challenge. I don't think they see it that way. They see it as, well, it's not really the next frontier because they're already there. They're just like, well, we've kind of exhausted America and the UK, really. How much further can we, you know, flog these empires? Let's just take over the other places, you know, and let's just make sure we've got the plan to do it again this time. And some people call it neocolonialism. Yeah, I don't really believe in that term because some people would argue, really, England and, you know, certain powers never really truly retracted their claws from the days of the, marvelous African cake, as they used to call it. And that people should watch that documentary.
The Magnificent African Cake.
Which is a brilliant documentary. I recommend people watch that just to see how the European powers carved up Africa in the first place, with total disregard of long-term effects of the people, about the people and their history. And by the way, Africa's history, I mean, the scientists will tell you that we all probably come from Africa and all that kind of stuff. Who knows about that? But we definitely know Africa's history is rich and one of the oldest. I mean, Timbuktu, maybe the world's oldest library. Why were they destroying that? You've got to wonder, why were militants destroying the world's oldest knowledge source, supposedly? Who knows?
When you're talking about the GDP, there's a huge black market in Nigeria, which is not included in the official numbers. So it's actually much larger than what it looks like on paper. They admit to about $140 billion a year for just the oil alone. Of course, that's going to Western oil companies. Fine.
Of course, I mean, Shell, and everyone knows the story behind Shell and some of the stuff they did with them. You know, Ken Saro-Wiwa and that story, which is terrible. And, you know, just to tie all of that stuff kind of up, I mean, again, Nigeria's got a very rich history, but all they seem to talk about nowadays is his oil and Boko Haram. If an alien or an extraterrestrial, whatever you're describing, came to the planet and were just randomly looking and like, that country, Nigeria, what do we know about it in our file? Boko Haram, oil, is that it? I mean, it's propaganda. It's propaganda because here's the thing about the oil. The world's supposed fifth biggest oil producer, but yet still has rolling blackouts. Now, Nigeria is poised for huge change, not just in its economy and in its development. The richest African in the world.
Aliko Dangote. He's an oil guy, too.
He's not hard to find because this guy has been having secret meetings with Mr. President Obama. So you can look him up and everyone knows who he is. He supposedly last year has gone into collaboration with some big, powerful companies to build oil refineries in Nigeria once and for all, and to overcome this problem of rolling blackouts and Nigeria having to, you know, rely on others to process its petroleum. So that is a game changer for the country and its people, basically. Now, you could argue some people do not like this because, heaven forbid, Nigeria becomes independent of the powers that be. So is it any coincidence that, as that's kind of announced last year, all of a sudden Boko Haram's activities step up to destabilize the country? I'll leave that to other people to work out for themselves. But
it's not like the violence started with the kidnappings. I mean, Boko Haram's been behaving that way forever.
Right. Well, not forever, because, the context is very important. And some people ask this question, as do I. Whatever happened to that group MEND, as in M-E-N-D, the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta? You know, sometimes it's called a terrorist organization by the powers that be. Some Nigerians who live in the Niger Delta see them as liberators or trying to get equality for those whose land the oil really sits, beneath and who, you know, suffered terrible pollution, an ecocide, as they call it. But you've got to wonder, this group, which, you know, sprung up around 2004 and was very active between 2006 until about 2012, they suddenly just disappeared. Now, the last recorded activity for them was in August 15, 2013, when they supposedly hijacked an oil vessel, which was flying under the flag of St. Kitts and Nevis. And the Nigerian Navy took care of that very swiftly, that action, which basically killed the pirates, as they called them, 12 of them, and then 4 surrendered. But it's funny, as they've kind of gone off the map, because they were getting a lot of press for what, you know, bringing attention to the inequality, you know, and obviously their tactics are questionable, because as everyone knows about me, I deplore killing of any sort, and end of story, I don't care what the reason is. But, you know, it's funny how they've kind of gone off the map, and Boko Haram have just kind of come, just literally taken taken over. If we look at Boko Haram itself, what do we know about them? Apart from them being very active and apparently the Nigerian army not being able to stop them, which you've got to really question. Whenever, it's funny, whenever you look, for example, on the BBC website, it's like the BBC revels in telling you only certain things about Boko Haram. Pretty much every story you see about Boko Haram on the BBC website, apart from one of the ones recently, the last one they did after the attack on the market in Yos, always states the same thing. They always delight in telling you Boko Haram means blah, 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 means, you know, they tell you the meaning of it, you know, I mean, they're fighting to overthrow, and they tell you they're fighting to overthrow the Nigerian government and create an Islamic State. And then they tell you about all of the gory attacks they produce. They don't tell you where it really came from, who they are. Again, it's a bit like Al-Qaeda. Who are they? And how come all of a sudden they're seen as this group that can, you know, is unstoppable. It's human trafficking goes across borders and the government doesn't know what they're doing. They come by night. They're killing people indiscriminately. And you've known about them for how long and yet you can't do anything about it?
Yeah, well, I mean, Al-Qaeda is getting financed in Syria and now they're saying some of the mercenaries in Syria with Blackwater, whoever, they can't find them. With the NSA and everything else and the guys that they were paying and now they've disappeared. Like, really?
Right. And again, what is the truth? This group, Boko Haram, seems to have suddenly become very well-armed. How did that suddenly happen? More well-armed than the Nigerian military with all of the oil that country has and for all of that the powers care about Nigeria. All of a sudden, Boko Haram has become super armed and can't be stopped. This is nonsense. Not to mention, I mean, what is the truth behind the kidnapping of those girls? You know, the reports that the Nigerian government knew about it beforehand or was warned, let's say, before it happened, and they say that's not true because they say they would have done something. But ask the residents who live in the area or ask the residents of any of the latest attacks or the attacks of the last couple of years who feel that the government have not done enough or just abandoned them to it or just even after attacks, they just fail to materialize, and which gives the bandits or Boko Haram or whoever's doing the killing even more time to, you know, wreak havoc. Again, you hear, let's say they didn't have advance warning, but again, you hear that several hundred girls have been kidnapped, and it takes you how long to react? And then there's the story of, are they in Chad? Are they not in Chad? Are they still in the country? Was that them in the video? How does the government not notice? And of course, lo and behold, we now have 80 US troops supposedly in Chad to aid the sexually abducted Nigerians after the government said they weren't and they hadn't been taken across the border. Which one is it? You cannot trust the Americans or the British, if you want to put it that way. I don't believe in these national terms. I'm sorry. We're all connected. We, you know, we're all part of the human species. But it does worry a lot of Nigerians when you see UK Foreign Secretary William Hague or US State Department spokesman Jen Psaki, her again, or Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan, basically all reading off the same page. Oh, this is terrible. Boko Haram's cruel and evil. I think we can all agree that anytime someone is killed or anytime a girl is kidnapped or human trafficked or, you know, forced into sexual slavery, we can all agree it's terrible. These things are happening in pretty much every country on a daily basis. Why is everyone not crying about it? We don't need, you know, Michelle Obama and this Twitter hashtag campaign for us to all feel shamed into doing something about it. We should be constantly speaking about it.
Look at the millions of Africans starving from or being slaughtered in the Congo, Somalia, Ethiopia, Eritrea, the African immigrants in Israel getting abused. I mean, there's so many stories, and then suddenly they care about this one. And I, of course, I'm against kidnapping and murder. But I'm very suspicious about it, about the attention that's given to it out of the blue. You see these things, it's kind of an emotional story that gets sold to the public to justify a military pretext, in this case for the French and for the Americans. And we saw this prior to the Afghanistan war. At first it was a revenge attack for 9/11, allegedly. But of course, you collectively punish the entire country for what Al-Qaeda is supposed to have done. But what they started selling to the left was, well, we're going to Afghanistan for women's liberation and to build schools for these girls who are forced to live a certain way and cover their faces and blah, blah, blah. And so it's kind of like a dead baby story, literally, like babies on incubators to justify the first war in Iraq and then the bull for the second war in Iraq. Kidnapping women, of course, it's a very emotional story, and you see the memes everywhere, bring our girls back, but there have been a lot more than 300 girls sold into slavery sex slavery, and a lot more people killed than 100 from the couple bombings yesterday. And where was the attention? This to me is like Joseph Kony or Free Tibet or something. Like, suddenly now you give a damn. And it just seems like there's more economic motivations hiding behind this emotional story.
And again, if we put this into context, the girls, I mean, in the end, as people have heard me say on most shows that I've been on, in the end, it's the people that suffer. It's not the politicians or their rich corporate buddies or, you know, whoever is involved, the militants, you know, although most of them lose their lives because they're Ponzi's as well. But it's usually the people, as in the innocent people or the future of the country, as in the children in most conflicts that are wiped out. These poor girls, however many of them have been kidnapped, and we still don't even have the true figure because the government keeps disputing, is it 234, is it 200, is it less because some escaped. We know it's quite a large number, but again, the question should be asked, it's not about the number, it's about what took you so long to act in the first place. And again, all right, you were piecing together the information, but you're supposed to be the government of the country. Surely you have every resource available, you know, at your disposal, and you obviously do not want this story, you know, getting out there on a global stage and embarrassing.
That's not
you.
Their but, role. That's not their exactly. role as government, so, because so again, Nigeria is a classic banana republic, and Aliko Dangote, they're just there to facilitate the flow of oil to Western companies. They're not there to actually look for criminals or anything.
And so this goes to why is it taking you so long, and then for all of this campaigning to start, you know, this outcry from around the world? Because it serves the powers that be. Is it anything to do with the fact that perhaps AFRICOM is spreading its military, you know, auspices all over Africa and basically destabilizing the beautiful continent, which has a chance of perhaps becoming free? Truly becoming free of all of the shackles that the World Bank has tried to put on it in however long. Is it perhaps also the fact that it's the merry-go-round of British and American military contractors and you know, weapons companies will therefore sell more arms to Nigeria, who will say they need more arms to fight this massive threat that is Boko Haram, which by the way didn't exist very long ago. Really? Is it perhaps the fact that, well, yeah, we need to somehow find a way to secure those resources? You see, people will always go back and tell you about the oil in Iraq and Afghanistan, but resources are just not about that. Resources are people. It's the minerals. Mm-hmm. Africa has a lot of very rare minerals. The Chinese know about this very clearly, as everyone knows, and that's why they're there.
Uranium is a big one too.
Exactly. You look at so many countries have been basically exploited in Africa, and it's nonstop. People will argue about, you know, who's done the most exploiting. Is it the Chinese? Because at least they're giving the countries money. I argue that any exploitation is bad. You know, there's no such thing as, you know, the lesser of two evils is better. No, because the lesser of two evils is still evil. Everyone knows that. So again, the people themselves, I think, have to realize what's going on. And I think this is part of the story which is very interesting that has not received a lot of attention. It's received some because they're trying to show this emotional side of this story with Boko Haram and the kidnapping. But the family members, the community leaders who, you know, decried what's happened in Nigeria, who obviously denounced the president, said, why aren't you doing more? And then funnily enough, his wife, the First Lady of Nigeria, you know, personally ordering for some of these people who've been speaking out to be arrested because they dared to speak out and ask for more action. I mean, what a joke that is. And you also look at the fact that a lot of Nigerians are decrying this wedge that they're, it's like a wedge they're purposely trying to supposedly, you know, put in the country between Muslims and Christians. Nigeria, they always tell you the stat, it's half Christian, half Muslim. Nigerians never cared about that before because a lot of families were half Christian, half Muslim. It didn't really matter. That those were not fights families were having over that, you know, over who, which, you know, are your Christian.
But like the Sunni Shiite in Iraq, exactly. They were intermarried and fine prior to the second war.
And this is where it gets very dangerous, because again, people have coexisted and lived side by side. But when you start to do this dividing, you start to demonize certain groups, that's when you start to see people turning on each other and true destabilization. And you've seen it happening ever since this whole Boko Haram thing was truly sprung up in the last 4 to 5 years, you see community talking about, oh, well, all Muslims are bad, or you know, Christians are bad, and therefore we should have a Christian leader, we should have a Muslim leader, and this side is trying to cheat us, as opposed to just in general, everyone coming together and denouncing the Nigerian government for what they have been, which is basically stealing all revenue and not sharing it with the people and not truly improving the country's infrastructure and being subservient to the foreign masters. It's just as simple as that. Because again, there was a groundswell when Nigerians were truly getting on the government's back. But of course, things like this serve as misdirection for Nigerians to take their eyes off the ball, especially at a pivotal point when I said again, Nigeria is part of this group MINT, you know, Mexico, Indonesia, Nigeria, and Turkey, and part of this next 11, the N11, where truly you're seeing a global shift in what they call, you know, the power elite, even though again, will it benefit the people? And you can argue that if you look at the BRIC example, it hopefully eventually will, if the people themselves are active in that. So it's a very pivotal moment, but this concerted effort, and again, it's a concerted effort, people have to realize, by AFRICOM, you know, the military, the former colonial powers, to truly control Africa. It, you know, they can argue about, I mean, and I think sometimes, to put it in context, people forget, Egypt is an African country. You know, it's an African country. I think people sometimes forget that. And a lot of the other, you know, Northern African countries, they somehow think, oh, well, it's that Middle East part. No, no, Egypt is a very, very important part of Africa. Let's not get that, let's get that very straight. And this concerted effort in Egypt, Chad, Nigeria, Mali, Congo. And by the way, I keep saying this, Congo, if you don't know about our beautiful country of Congo people, I urge you to find out about it. Because Congo, by the way, contains the world's second largest rainforest. The Amazon is beautiful, important. Of course, it should get the coverage, it should get even more coverage, because we need to stop destroying Congo, equally as important. If we destroy that forest, rainforest too, it's over for all of us.
There are a lot of rare metals in the Congo, but the U.S. Yes, but, and the United Kingdom have both financed Paul Kagame in Rwanda and M23, and they've just been slaughtering these people year after year. 15 million prior to World War II, there's a Holocaust for you that actually happened, and it's nothing. I mean, people talk about the Armenian genocide, was it or not? Congo?
Well, I mean, look, as I always say, people will throw around terms like genocide. For me, it still comes down to the basics. But any country you're talking about, if one person is killed, we should all be upset. I don't need figures of millions. I just know if one person is killed, we should all be upset. Here's what is frankly very upsetting in the sense, apart that aside, is that, again, the world's second biggest rainforest. They never really mention that when they talk about Congo. It's all war, and those war-like people. They never talk about what the government actually tried to do to secure that beautiful rainforest, you know, from being deforested for such a long time without anyone really covering that issue. These are the kind of issues people have to get away from the misdirection and start to focus on. Why is Africa truly important? Why was this concerted effort? Just like there was a concerted effort all the way up until the 80s, and even now to a larger extent, in South America, until South America and its people were like, enough of this, you know, we're not standing for this and being dictated to like we're children anymore. Now, Africans, so to speak, themselves must realize their true potential and stop this allowing this to happen. Because this Boko Haram story is ridiculous. You mean to tell me literally like however many there are now, just over 1,000, some people say it's maybe more, maybe 2,000, so militants can literally hold a whole country to ransom. This is beyond a joke. This is not, and again, even you could argue they'll say other countries are less developed, but I think this is also a joke when you talk about Iraq and Afghanistan. You mean to tell me the Taliban and so-called Al-Qaeda can hold a whole country to ransom? It wouldn't be possible if they weren't getting finances from outside people. Because the one thing I think we can all definitely say we're sure about is I'm pretty sure the Iraq people are sick of war and Al-Qaeda or anyone in a country, any occupiers trying to tell them what to do. I'm sure the Afghanistani people are sick of war by now. I'm sure most of Africans are sick of war. I'm sure most Europeans who went through the Second World War, and even if some of them who are still survived the so-called Great War, how can you call any war great? Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm pretty sure we're all tired of war.
It's all the chicken hawks calling it great.
Right. So therefore, I think it's time to go beyond this nonsense. You know, people have to educate themselves about what's truly going on. And we can all agree that, look, yeah, anytime someone's kidnapped, we're all upset. Stop doing it because we're going to come and get you. End of story. We don't need a hashtag campaign. We don't need so-called celebrities losing their minds and saying this is bad. People know the difference between right and wrong. They don't need to be told that. They already know that. I'm sorry. And again, it's misdirection when you have the focus actually shifted. There was more focus on Boko Haram and celebrities and the hashtag campaign than there were on the girls themselves. I asked one person,
situation to begin with, the rolling blackouts, as you said, about 2/3 of the country lives on less than $2 a day. There's a slave trade. There's a sex slave trade. I mean, it's a horrible working conditions for these people in a country with all these resources and all this wealth that's being pulled out of it, colonial style, neocolonial style, however you want to label it. No one talks about that, just the specific minutia of a kidnapping or a bombing or a killing.
And just as I was going to add to that, but also important, like I said, though, where the focus should be, apart from the family members and maybe the community members, I dare anyone to tell me the name of one of those girls who was kidnapped. As in, shouldn't we know their names? Shouldn't it be broadcasted? We want her back. We want her back. You know, no, they just give you a random number and then we want them back. You know, they deep and dehumanizing these poor girls, basically, like they're collateral. Even the way they've been talking, it's almost like, well, we can't get them back. It's too late for them. Unfortunate for them. They've probably been sold. So how do we know we can't get them back? Why are we even putting that out there? Like, just in case, you know, we can have this excuse in case we don't get them
because
back.
Because, no. Ken, you have to hold up a sign written in English and post it on Facebook so that somebody without electricity that doesn't speak the language in Nigeria can see it and go, yeah, all right, I'll give you your girls back. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. I mean, and going from the whole what we do focus on to what we don't focus on, you know, as bad as some of the conditions are in Nigeria, they don't focus on, again, how resourceful Nigerians are, how smart Nigerians are. No, they'll tell you, oh, they're smart evil with their Nigerian princes and the email scam. How is it that they track most of those email scams supposedly to Eastern Europe or even the United States itself? Really? Come on. I mean, who's really behind that? Who's funneling that money? Funny how a lot of the Western companies and banks are the ones who funnel that money, isn't it? I mean, who's really behind those scams? But more importantly, they don't focus on good stories. This is something I've always railed on about.
Scams, I always thought it could be some clever person down in Ghana going through all the e-waste and finding out the addresses and bank numbers and sending them around. I mean, you know about that situation with the e-waste. They do the same thing in Vietnam and China, right? Indeed. Above Hong Kong. Dumping all the old computers and things and a lot of sensitive information sitting there. So if somebody wanted to sift through some of that mess down in Ghana, and they just pose as Nigerian because that's where most people are and it's the easiest place to hide, it would have been plausible. But I mean, that's not what's happening. But I just using that as a segue to talk about some of the pollution, because you were talking about the rainforest too. They are just using Africa as a trash can. I mean,
unfortunately, some places in South America, I mean, we've got islands. There's the famous one, you know, it's massive, an island of trash just floating out there,
yeah,
in the seas.
And it's been there long enough that there is a fungus now, a new type of fungus, or at least newly discovered, that is eating plastic very slowly. It's not a solution, but that's how much the environment has been there long enough for a fungus to develop a method of eating the plastic.
I mean, if the planet treated us the way we treat this beautiful planet, it would already be over for our species. I mean, it's shocking the way we treat our planet. It really is. I mean, and to go back to the lack of focus, something I always talk about that really annoys me personally, and I really wish, I mean, one, we have to go beyond traditional media. We all know that the traditional media is broken. It's all owned by you-know-who, and I won't name them. It is the Rothschilds and the Associated, you know, they own the Associated Press and Reuters and all of that. We all know that. You know, the conglomerates around the world that own most media, I mean, they're all in cahoots together. But basically, something that annoys me is that whenever they talk about certain regions or certain countries, it's all negative news. There's nothing positive happening in Nigeria, except for maybe their economy going up, because we like that, to, you know, money going up. You know, there's never anything positive. The people aren't doing anything positive. You know, there's nothing positive going on in their environment or in their nature or innovation. And that really ticks off a lot of people. Because heaven forbid people start to improve themselves and connect with their contemporaries around the world and try and build a better life and build a more sustainable future for all of us and our children and grandchildren. I mean, you know, collaboration in a good sense. They never really talk about that because here's the thing. People need that hope. People need to be uplifted. And there is a lot of good things going on in Africa, in South America, in Europe, all around it. People connecting, people awakening and sharing ideas. That's what the internet is, has spurred, which has been a great thing. And I think, again, a lot of this stuff with Boko Haram and that stuff is misdirection. Because I'm pretty sure we're all sick and tired of a lot of these stories and a lot of these groups, and we don't want them anymore. And I think it's time that people started speaking up about it. We don't need the military to go in and sort this one out. No, we the people, and I mean people big with a big P, need to make it very clear. We've had enough of this era of war and the so-called terrorism and fear-mongering, to stop people truly focusing on what's most important. Very soon
we've got to cut it off at the root. You have to end the economic devastation. When you have people living on less than $2 a day, making less than a T-net in Japan, when you've got people in that kind of desperate situation, of course they're going to be black markets, there's going to be crime, there's going to be all manner. I mean, they don't want to starve, and a lot of them are starving. There are millions of Africans starving. If you don't fix the economic situation, and that is fixable, it is caused by colonial and banana republic style and IMF predatory lending style takeovers, then there's always going to be a new person to pick up a gun or to kidnap somebody or what have you. But we are always ignoring the economic situation of these people and just trying to attack the symptoms.
But here's the most important thing about what you just said, though. As much as we can say there are millions of Africans starving, there are millions of people all around the world, including the so-called most prosperous country on the face of the planet, America. Look at the stats for how many children are going hungry in America itself, which sounds inconceivable. For the world's richest country, but it's true. And again, how is that possible?
Well, they got a million and a half people in prison in America, more than China or anywhere.
Well, there is that too, the military-industrial complex, prison-industrial complex. And there's wonderful books which talk about that and New Jim Crow, so to speak. But again, people have to look at why are we where we are? Because it's inconceivable that actually there's actually more than enough food on the planet to feed more than 7 billion people. How is anyone hungry? There's more than enough property, so to speak, or land to host 7 billion people. How can there be homeless people? Because again, human greed, stupidity, division, and these are the tools that the powers that be use to divide us all. And okay. we can definitely go beyond that and make sure these things aren't happening.
Because corruption isn't sexy, Ken.
Yes, and you're alluding obviously to my book, and that is the title of my it's not my latest book because I actually just released a book, to kind of counterbalance that, because I believe we all need hope in this world. There is a hope for every, and I keep saying this, for everything the power.
It's the one I've most recently read, so that's the one I'm going with.
Indeed, and I'll go into that in just a second. Just to say this, a very important point. But all that the powers that be have tried to break people, for all of the assassinations of people who've been truth tellers, they cannot break the human spirit. I truly believe that when people connect, strangers, when people travel, meet each other, share ideas on the internet, when there's, we realize what it is to be, a common people, the decisions break away. And this is what the powers that be can't stand. They still haven't truly been able to break the true human spirit. When we look at corruption, I mean, corruption is that thing that can happen to any human. I don't care how good you are. It can happen to anyone if you're desperate enough or you're put into a situation. The book, as you alluded to, Corruption Isn't Sexy, it's a fictional tale, but let's just say it's rooted in real life experiences that I've encountered and, myself and through other people. And it's, some of it is tongue in cheek. Some of it's very serious. Some of the issues that, we deal with, that I deal with in that book, you know, I deal with, you know, I don't go into depth because I really want people to research for themselves. I always say, look, you don't have to take my word for it. The information is definitely out there now. Go and talk to someone. Go and research in the library. I mean, heaven forbid, people still go to libraries nowadays. I love libraries. You should do it because they have some stunning books, you know, which were not doctored and have valuable information. You have the internet.
It's necessary, too, because, I mean, the internet's a wonderful resource, but there are sort of circles and bubbles created on the internet where...
And not everyone has access to an internet, whereas you may need to just walk into your local library, you know. So good on all the libraries that are still running around the world and avoiding being shut down. So, I mean, the book Corruption Isn't Sexy touches upon many things, greed, morality, what it means to be, you know, a male, a female, you know, right and wrong, the finance industry. I mean, I don't go into depth because I really want people to go, you know, to really research themselves and see what are the troubles that are pervading the world right now. What are the, and, you know, more importantly, how can we live when there's all this pressure to be corrupt in some ways from the entertainment, infotainment, you know, industry, you know, and, you know, trying to...
Yeah, they make it look like, well, we're lying to people and getting one over on somebody. That just means you're clever. That's just part of the business world. You know, that's the good... Right. You're just smarter than them if they are dumb enough to believe you and stuff.
And you know, it's almost like this lifestyle trust that corruption is sexy. You know, do this, do that. Everyone cheats on their partner. Everyone is on the take and not, you know, hustling. This is not the truth. We know this is not the truth. But people have bought into this escapism, and it's ridiculous. I mean, hence the title, Corruption Isn't Sexy. There are things we know that are true. And, you know, that, you know, we can lie to ourselves about for a long time, but we know that they're true. So the book is very much, you know, it's action-packed, you know, uses some real-life examples like the ecocide that's gone on Native American lands, which I feel very passionate about, by the way, because it's that's another issue that is definitely not touched upon enough, the genocide, basically, of the whole entire, you know, Native American what race, people, however you want to class them.
Well, everything, you know, culture's gone, language is gone, physically disgusting. Gone.
Absolutely disgusting. And people really need to, because the way that Native Americans live off the land, I think is very enviable, and, you know, the idea of sustainability and that the fact that actually we don't own land. We belong to the planet, and I strongly believe in that. We don't own land. I know people do buy land, and, you know, you've been on a piece of property for a long time, but we don't own it. I'm sorry, we just don't. I mean, you really don't own it. We belong to the planet, and perhaps if we went back to basics, a lot of the problems we have would get better. So, yeah, corruption is...
I don't think serious thought is put into that, though. People just thought, oh, that's just new age wishy-washy.
Right, whatever. I mean...
thought does need to be put in there. I mean... You don't have to accept it, but don't be dismissive about that. I mean, the concept of land ownership is huge, and people really need to sit down and think about how, you know, a small group of people basically own it all and rent it to everyone else, and you are working your whole life for a piece of dirt that's no more theirs than yours. Well, who'd they buy it from in the beginning?
Well, exactly.
You know?
I mean, and then, you know, people will talk about land deeds and pieces of paper, but who does the land truly belong to? It belongs actually to all of us, if you want to look at it that way, but actually we belong to the earth. So therefore, all the resources belong to everyone and vice versa.
Well, no, Izzy had it right, that British comedian. It's the cunning use of flags.
Right, indeed. You know, this division that we all use, you know, nationality, identity, so to speak, you know, even terms like Nigerian and British and black, white, you know, I'm gay, I'm straight. I mean, you know, whatever it is we use. I mean,
it's what Gilad Osman calls the azas. So people will say, well, as a black, as a gay, as a whatever. And that whole identity politics, it is this, it's this, they think they're being diverse and multicultural and
right,
uniting,
but it's the exact
opposite. You're cutting yourselves into tiny little categories, and it never works.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, if we were going to use divisions, if you said something like, as a human, here's the thing. Everyone would be able to relate to that, because we're all human, last time I checked. I don't, you know, in the general sense. So you know, again, we need to go beyond the kind of usual misdirection and arguments that people are having, because here's the thing. the rate our species is going, and with all the things going on, people can call it climate change or whatever they want, or geoengineering, which is more actually the scientific term, and people should look into that. But we're not going to have much choices much longer if we don't get smarter as a species, because the last time I checked, the planet, for whatever reason, is showing us certain things, you know, be it stronger earthquakes, stronger, you know, weather patterns, drought in one half of the country, flooding in another half. We really need to get smarter as a species and learn how to truly survive properly. Otherwise, we're not going to be here much longer. And last time I checked, the planet will be here. This idea, this notion that we will destroy the planet, you know, no.
Nah.
I'm pretty sure the planet will destroy us before we ever get around to totally, you know,
why not? We might destroy ourselves, but, you know, this rock will still be floating around in space.
Absolutely. And because it's a beautiful one and it will regenerate itself. So again, you know, for me, my idea is to, you know, for us all to kind of go beyond and discuss solutions, ways to live better and to live, you know, in serenity. Because I don't really, but this idea of peace, by the way, has unfortunately been bought. As I look at it, you know, even the term
they've polluted the word. It's like humanitarian. Humanitarian no longer means humanitarian. But I think, right, and corruption isn't sexy. One of the things for my opinion, is like popping that bubble of how the entertainment industry, etc., pushes on people this dog eat dog one-upmanship, and of how, you know, it's cool to do drugs, it's cool to do this, it's cool to destroy yourself, it's cool to engage in these activities and lying and trying to have more stuff than the other person, and this kind of horrible egoism that people get addicted to. And they see war itself too as an extension of that, you know, my team beat the other team, and this kind of collective vicarious masculinity and so on, and these gender roles that are placed at, that really have nothing to do with biology or anything. We've got to pop that bubble from the entertainment industry and Hollywood of how awesome it is for, you know, the whole America F yeah attitude or wherever. I mean, that's the really pervasive in culture across the board.
And here's the thing. I mean, in the end, are good people going to stand up for what's right? I mean, this is what comes to mind. I mean, we all have ideas about morality and what is, you know, what is good. And people use the term evil. Some people say you shouldn't use that term because that's also a polluted word. But I think in general, we are all born with a moral compass, whether people don't believe that or not. And I think people have to stand up for what they think is right and not be afraid, as the power that be want us to be, you know, in standing up for what we think is right and living in a way where you don't, you know, naturally think about hurting another person, actually, where your natural instinct is to help, you know, because where would we be if that natural instinct wasn't, you know, beaten out of most people, you know, when they get older, you know, that innocence children have to share and, you know, to play, because children do have that instinctively, as much as people tell you, oh, look at those children, look at them, no, you know, they hate each other. No, that's not true. I'm sorry.
No, when someone's hurt, a child's the first one to take care and try and do something. And yeah, you see it through school, basically. They get it, the whole thing just beaten out of their heads. That don't help someone, help yourself. You know, that's they learn. Just be obedient. Don't get involved. It's none of your business. Stay out of it. Let the teacher control everything. Let the adults do everything. Let the authorities do everything.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I hope people will enjoy Corruption Isn't Sexy, and all, you know, all opinions on it are welcome. All ratings and reviews are welcome. It's out there on Amazon, iTunes, Smashwords, all of the above. So Kobo. So, you know, find it, give your opinions. They're all welcome. And
I've got it linked below to Amazon, but I also have it linked inside my fundraising campaign for independent journalism, so that people who donate in the next week will get a copy of that, plus whatever perk that's written there on the side. And I appreciate you for lending me the book to do that. Because I want to read it more. I also want to, you know, I want this exposure for yourself. And of course, I'm very sincere about the campaign too. But even if people, I don't know if they would, why anybody would disagree with independent journalism, but if you want to just get the book directly, you can go get it on Amazon, or if you're not hearing this broadcast until after the week is passed, you can still get the book directly from Amazon in the link below.
I mean, yeah, much appreciated for that, Ryan. I mean, one thing I would say is that, yeah, thank you everyone who does donate to Ryan's campaign, because, you know, what he's doing, and he's been out there for a long time, you know, fighting the good fight, so to speak. And thank you for everyone who does donate to that campaign. I've donated myself, and there will be a special, some special tidbits in the special edition ebook you'll be receiving for the next week for that. And I have to say, it was quite an emotional drain writing the book, in the sense that really thinking about the issues that we face and how we can overcome it was quite liberating. And because of that, I kind of wrote the last book I wrote was kind of like the counterbalance. It was a book of haiku and poetry, trying to just to kind of center myself, to be honest, and think about, actually, we can, you know, well, there is hope in the world when you look at the children, when you look at people like yourself, Ryan, you know, standing up and not being afraid to give your real opinions and trying to connect people. And as well, you know, the support I've received, you know, has been phenomenal. And, you know, and when we talk about balance, I mean, people should obviously check out Ryan's work as well. I mean, he has a book out there, which I'm definitely supporting, called Separation of Business and State.
Yeah,
I've already bought my copy, because I like, you know, I put, you know, as much as I despise money, it is the current currency of this society. So I bought my copy already. I was one of the first.
There's a paper version of that coming out here soon. And I do want to mention some good news, because of all the negative things we've been talking. We do have to identify problems. But like you're saying, there is a lot of pushback. There's a blow to the NSA in California. They're no longer going to be materially supporting them anymore. Oregon, just a couple different counties banned GMOs. So slowly, you know, piece by piece, people are standing up and getting their rights back. But we're kind of turning a corner. We're at a tipping point right now, because we've never been able to organize like we can now because of the internet. And you see the power referendum in the United States, and you see Mint and BRICS and others uniting across the world. So there is a pushback. It's just the revolution won't be televised. You're not going to see it, but it's happening.
Well, here's the thing. You say you're not going to see it, but actually I think you will. And here's how. Because you're going to be part of it, everyone. Because you have to be part of it. I don't believe in this whole 99%, 1% thing. Because here's the thing I always argue. We need everyone.
Yeah. Well, look at Iceland kicking the bankers out. And, you know.
Right. And we need everyone to be on the same page that, look, we need to work together and to go beyond. Because I believe with true collaboration, where would we be as a species? You know, we talk about going to Mars. We would have probably already left this universe if we were all collaborating a long time ago and not being divided. You know, we talk about people being hungry, homeless, you know, being sold into slavery. These things wouldn't be happening if we truly cared for our fellow brother and sister, and we truly connected and we're not afraid to stand up. And again, here's what I would tell anyone who tells you it's not possible to get to where we need to be, where we, you know, we truly treat each other like the brothers and sisters we are. Why are you listening to them? Why are we listening to them? We have listened to these people for long enough. They do not have the solutions that, you know, will make this world a better place. You know, these politicians, these corporations, these bankers, who, by the way, who admit that they do criminal things, but somehow always get a slap on the wrist from the justice departments of countries. You know, they don't get jail time, even though we don't really like the prison industrial complex, but they don't get jail time. But someone like a Cicely Martin, I believe her name is, who was an Occupy Wall Street campaigner who had who was grabbed behind on her breast, will actually get jail time of 3 months, you know, for attacking a police officer. One person is not better than another person. And when we start to think like
not
that,
even when they wear a fancy hat or have a shiny badge.
Well, here's the thing, just in general, however you want to divide it, because that's generally what tends to lead to people killing each other and justifying, oh yeah, well, they're terrorists, so it's easy to kill them, and we'll take care of if they're really terrorists later, or civilians. Or, for example, yeah, we don't really like that group because they seem to think they're better than us. Yeah, we're within our rights to take them out. Or we think that group of Africans, they're subhuman, there's no problem taking them out. So again, no one person is better than each other. When we truly realize that and connect on that basic level, and again, stop listening to those who actually don't have our best interests at heart, I think what you're going to find, there are a lot of solutions out there. There are a lot of people doing good work, and there's always hope. You know, as Ryan said, it may sound like we've spoken about a lot of negative stuff, but as we've said, though, that's the misdirection. people. That is truly the misdirection. They do not want you to focus on the good things that are having, the potential, how things could be turning, you know, if people were left to their natural
devices. New oil deal in Palestine with Venezuela. I mean, things are happening, but the good news doesn't get the attention that the bad news gets. But I implore people, and I encourage journalists especially, we need a rehumanization. And I don't like this guy for some things he did, but one of the powerful things that Michael Moore did prior to the second war in Iraq was he simply went to Iraq and filmed ordinary daily stuff. Kids on playgrounds and people driving and eating ice cream and what have you. Which sounds like common sense. Like, obviously, there's cities and they're like just about anywhere else on Earth. But for a lot of people, the only footage they'd ever seen is war-torn Iraq and the army and things like that. Same thing with North Korea. All you see is, you know, the goose-stepping and so on. We need just footage, I think, of basic daily life in some places to show that, look how similar these people are. These are people, too, a rehumanization of the planet to show faces for these victims so that when there's a drone strike or when there's some awful thing, that people understand that these are people. And I don't think they think, of course they know they're people, but they're not thought of in the same way as, you know, when the Boston bombing happened, the world lost its mind. Over 100 and some people killed in Iraq the same day. Plenty of other murders all over the U.S. too on the same day. But it's not seen in the same light. It all depends on how much attention the media gives it or not, to how much it's sunk into the consciousness of the collective. It all depends on media, and that's why we need more journalists to rehumanize and more people to give reports on good news as well, because that's what makes people matter in other people's minds. You have to show the quality of life, you have to show the beauty, you have to show the goodness, because if you don't, when something bad happens, it doesn't really sink in, it doesn't have the impact that it ought to.
Well, and again, as I said earlier, you know, further to that point, no one person is better than another. I don't believe that a group is, you know, is more superior than another. I don't believe that one, you know, race is superior than the other, because I don't really believe in races. When we really start to see each other's brothers and sisters, we will all be upset when someone is, you know, raped, murdered, assaulted, whatever it is, blown up, because everyone matters in the end. Because we have to go back to a zero sum. Why are people doing what they're doing? Why are people killing each other and you know, hurting each other? It's as simple as that. When we go back and start solving these problems and people start treating each other with dignity and respect, perhaps then we might have a better right to exist as a species on this beautiful planet. Because again, we can't keep going down that path that we've gone. And I think there's hope. There's always hope. When you look at the children in any country, when you hear a child laugh, when you see your friend smile, you know, when you look at the sun or some clouds that are natural, not engineered, and you wonder
the back of a plane, right?
Right, and you wonder at the marvel of this beautiful planet that we're lucky to be on. I think these are the things that actually just put people in a better mood during the day. You know, and I'll give you an interesting antidote. I mean, it might be a bit.
That's the reverse of the broken windows effect, really, like what you're saying right there. And yeah, exactly. That's how it is. And no one person is better than another, possible exception of Kate Beckinsale. But
no. Again, no. No one is
joke.
Better than
it's a joke.
Indeed, I know.
Yes, but I'm running up out of the time here. But I do encourage everyone to get and read "Corruption Isn't Sexy" and to keep that name, Ken Sinola, on your mind, because this guy writes books very quickly. I think you've written 10 or so, that's the goal?
I've written 12.
12? Yeah, but 10 in a really short period of time, though.
I set myself starting in April. I set myself a target of 4 books in 4 months. And we're on track, because the last two have been released 1 month apart, and the next one is due in a couple of weeks. That is a huge book of poetry and uplifting photography. And then in July, it should be in July, will be the last book in that series, which will be a novel or novella about an assassin, which for anyone who knows me, that will sound very interesting to you, because you know I'm definitely anti-killing. So look out for that. And Ryan Dawson is going to have an exclusive, because I'm going to reveal the title of that book, and it will be called Armed and deadly. Look out for that again. It's been a pleasure being on here, Ryan. I look forward to engaging more with you, your fellow interviewees and your fans and anyone who wants to get in touch in general. For my fellow Nigerians, if we have to use that division, you know, I go under the moniker of Ken Sanola, but everyone obviously knows my real name, I'm sure, especially if you're Nigerian, it's Koinde Sonola. I'm sure Ryan will put that in the information. So that's actually my full name, because I don't hide that. I'm very proud of where I came from. And just like Ryan, by the way, I am a twin. And that is something we deeply connect on, because anyone who's a twin...
Our birthday is one day apart.
Yes, although I would like you not to reveal that.
Going to say when it is, but it's a day from mine.
It is, and that's pretty amazing, probably why we also connect to another. And I would say something about twins, triplets, quadruplets, any of those, multiples. I think one reason why perhaps we have hope and we believe in certain things is, a lot of us have a certain connection to our twin, triplet, and so on. And it's an intangible bond you can't describe. And I think we all kind of have that with each other, whether we're, family or not, as in blood family. But with the twin and the triplet bond, it's kind of intensified, kind of almost like what humans could potentially be like when you're kind of, with the times where you're totally unselfish and you have this moment where you have a very clear thought with your twin. And it's a very powerful moment when stuff like that happens, and very uplifting, to be honest. So I think that's kind of one of those things that I always draw upon when I need hope, and, when you see all of these negative stories out there. Because I think, again, we are all connected, whether it's spiritually or, universally, one way or the other. And again, don't give up hope, people, because there are people like Ryan who want to connect with you, people like myself who want to connect with you. So get in touch. All opinions are welcome, certainly by me, because I don't have all the answers. I'm always looking to learn. And I always urge everyone, as you know, to research yourself. Don't take my word for it, because, hey, who am I? I'm just someone who believes in uplifting people and getting in contact with people. But I urge you to do your research, get in contact. And it's been a pleasure, Ryan. My thanks.
Yes, don't let fear paralyze you. And when you see something awful like what's happening in Nigeria, that is bad, but military intervention may not be the solution, because history will show you when the U.S. or Western powers go into an area for whatever reason, they tend to never leave. So it's something to be very cautious and wary about. And Ken, thank you for your time. And people, you can check out the prior interviews on Fukushima as well, which are in the archives. Take care, Ken.
Much appreciated, Ryan. Good luck to you, and look forward to being on the show again. And to everyone, love and serenity. One people, one world.